Sylvan Nye moved to block them, while Sulin's fingers flickered in hand-talk, sending a Nyla and a blocky maiden named Dagendra toward the door the Aes Sedai were approaching. The Saldaeans looked to Bashir, who gestured for them to stay, but then he himself looked a question at Rand. Alana made a vexed sound.
"We will speak with him alone, Ivan."
The slender warder frowned, then nodded slowly. Varen glanced back, looking slightly startled, as though pulled from deep thought.
"What? Oh, yes, of course. Tomas, stay here, please."
The gray-haired warder appeared doubtful, and he gave Rand a hard look before lounging back against the wall beside the door to the street. At least he was lounging if a tripwire could be said to be lounging. Only then did the knife hands relax, as much as Aiel ever relaxed. "I want to talk to them alone," Rand said, looking straight at Sulin. For a moment he thought she meant to dispute him. Her jaw firmed stubbornly. Finally, hand-talk passed between her, Anila, and Agendra, and they moved back, looking at him and shaking their heads in disapproval. Sulin's fingers moved again, and all the maidens laughed. He wished there was some way to learn hand-talk. Sulin had been scandalized when he asked. Confused looks passed among the Two Rivers girls as Rand started after the Aes Sedai, and he closed the door behind them on a rising buzz. It was a small room, but with polished chairs instead of benches and pewter candlesticks on both the polished table and the vine-carved mantel above the fireplace. The two windows were shut, yet no one made a move to open one. He wondered if either Aes Sedai had noticed that the heat touched him no more than it did them. "Will you be taking them to the rebels?" he asked immediately. Frowning, Varen smoothed her skirts.
"You know considerably more about that than we do. We did not hear of events in the tower until Whitebridge."
Alana's tone was cool, but there was heat in the eyes she kept fixed on him.
"What do you know of rebels?"
A world of distaste entered her voice with that word. So they had heard the rumors first in Whitebridge and made haste here, keeping everything from the girls. And by the reactions of Bode and the others, the decision not to go to Tarvalen was fresh. Seemingly they had found confirmation this morning. "I don't suppose you'll tell me who your spy in Camelon is." They merely looked at him, Varen tilting her head to study him. Strange how Aes Sedai gazes had been so unsettling once. So serene, whatever was happening, so knowing. Having an Aes Sedai stare at him, or even two, no longer made his stomach turn uneasily.
"Pride,"
Luce Theron laughed madly, and Rand suppressed a grimace. "I've been told rebels exist. You haven't denied knowing where they are. I mean no harm to them. Far from it. I have reason to believe they might support me." He kept back his main reason for wanting to know. Perhaps Bashir was right. Perhaps he did need Aes Sedai backing. But mainly he wanted to know because he had been told Elaine was with them. He needed her to gain Andor peacefully. That was his only motive in seeking her, the only one. He was as dangerous to her as to Avienda.
"For the love of the light, if you know, tell me."
"If we did know," Alana replied, "we would have no right to tell anyone. Should they decide to support you, you may be certain they will seek you out."
"In their time," Varen said, "not yours."
He smiled grimly. He should have expected as much, or as little. Moraine's advice was in the front of his head. Trust no woman who wore the shawl on the day she died.
"Is Matt with you?"
Alana asked, as if that were the last thing on her mind, really. "If I knew where he was, why should I tell you?
Turn and turn about."
They did not seem to think that was funny.
"It is foolish to treat us as enemies," Alana murmured, moving toward him. "You look tired. Are you getting enough rest?"
He stepped back from her raised hand, and she stopped.
"Like you, Rand, I mean no harm. Nothing I do here will cause you any injury."
Since she had said it straight out, it must be so. He nodded, and she raised her hand to his head. His skin tingled faintly as she embraced Sidar, and a familiar warm ripple passed through him, the feel of her checking his health. Ilana nodded in satisfaction, and suddenly the warmth was heat, one great flash of it, as if he stood for a heartbeat in the middle of a roaring furnace. Even after it passed, he felt odd, aware of himself as he never had been before, aware of Ilana. He swayed, head light, muscles watery. An echo of confusion and unease rang from Luz Theron.
"What did you do?"
he demanded. In a fury, he seized Sidar. The strength of it helped hold him upright.
"What did you do?"
Something beat at the flow between him and the true source. They were trying to shield him. Weaving his own shields, he slammed them into place. He truly had gone far and learned much since Varen last saw him. Varen staggered, putting a hand on the table for support, and Ilana grunted as if he had punched her.
"What did you do?"
Even deep in the cold, emotionless void as he was, his voice grated.
"Tell me!" "I made no promises not to hurt you. If you don't tell me—"
"She bonded you,"
Varen said quickly, but if her serenity had been ruffled, it cloaked her again in an instant.
"She bonded you as one of her warders, that is all."
Ilana recovered her composure even faster. Shielded, she faced him calmly, arms folded, a hint of contentment about her eyes.
"Contentment. I said I would not injure you, and I have done exactly the opposite of injury."
Drawing deep, slow breaths, Rand tried to settle himself. He had walked into it like a puppy. Rage crawled across the outside of the void.
Calm. He must be calm. One of her warders.
She was a green then. Not that that made any difference. He knew little of warders, certainly not how to break the bond, or if it could be broken. All Rand felt from Luz Theron was a sense of stunned shock. Not for the first time, Rand wished Lan had not gone galloping away after Moraine died.
"You said you won't be going to Tar Valon.
In that case, since you don't seem to know where the rebels are, you can remain here in Camelon." Ilana opened her mouth, but he rode over her.
"Be grateful if I decide not to tie off those shields and leave you like that."
That got their attention. Varen's mouth tightened, and Ilana's eyes could have done for that furnace he had felt.
"You will stay away from me, though, both of you. Unless I send for you, the inner city is barred to you. Try to break that, and I will leave you shielded, and in a cell besides. Do we understand one another?"
"Perfectly."
Despite her eyes, Ilana's voice was ice. Varen merely nodded. Flinging open the door, Rand stopped. He had forgotten the Two Rivers girls. Some were talking to the maidens, some were just studying them and whispering over their tea. Bode and a handful of the Emmons Fielders were questioning Bashir, who had a pewter mug in his fist and one foot up on a bench. They looked half entertained, half aghast. The door banging open whipped their heads around.
"Rand!" Bode exclaimed. "This man is saying awful things about you. He says you're the Dragon Reborn,"
Lorraine spluttered. The girls in the rest of the room apparently had not heard. They gasped.
"I am," Rand said wearily.
Lorraine sniffed and folded her arms beneath her breasts.
"As soon as I saw that coat, I knew you had gotten a big head running off with an Aes Sedai the way you did. I knew it before you talked so disrespectfully to Ilana Sedai and Varen Sedai, but I didn't know you had become a stone-blind jackfool."
Bode's laugh was more appalled than amused.
"You shouldn't say such a thing even as a joke, Rand. Tam raised you better than that. You're Randall Thor. Now stop this foolishness."
Randall Thor. That was his name, but he hardly knew who he was. Tamal Thor had raised him, but his father had been an Aiel chief, now long dead. His mother had been a maiden, but not Aiel. That was as much as he really knew of who he was. Sidene still filled him. Gently he wrapped Bode and Lorraine in flows of air and lifted them until their shoes dangled a foot above the floor.
"I am the Dragon Reborn. Denying won't change it. Wishing won't change it. I'm not the man you knew back in Emmons Field. Do you understand now? Do you?
He realized he was shouting and clamped his mouth shut. His stomach was lead and he was trembling. Why had Alana done what she did? What Aes Sedai scheme was hatching behind that pretty face? Trust none of them, Moraine had said. A hand touched his arm, and his head jerked around.
Please let them down, Alana said. Please. They are frightened.
They were more than frightened. Lorene's face seemed drained of blood, and her mouth gaped as wide as it would go, as if she wanted to scream and had forgotten how. Bode was sobbing so hard she quivered. They were not the only ones. The rest of the Two Rivers girls had huddled together as far from him as they could get, and most of them were crying, too. The serving maids were in that tight cluster as well, weeping as hard as anyone else. The innkeeper had sagged to his knees, goggle-eyed and gurgling wordlessly. Rand eased the two girls back down and hastily let go of Sidene.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
As soon as they could move, Bode and Lorene fled to join the other girls, clutching one another.
Bode, Lorene, I'm sorry. I won't hurt you, I promise.
They did not look at him. None of them did. Sulin was certainly looking at him, and the rest of the maidens, too. Blank-faced, flat-eyed, disapproving stares.
What's done is done, Bashir said, setting down his mug. Who knows? Perhaps it's for the best.
Rand nodded slowly. It probably was. Best that they wanted to stay clear of him.
Best for them.
He just wished he could have talked a little while longer about home. A little while longer with them seeing only Randall Thor. His knees still wobbled from the bonding, but once he began moving, he did not stop until he was back in Jaden's saddle. Best that they were afraid of him. Best that he forgot the Two Rivers. He wondered whether that mountain ever got lighter for a time, or only kept on getting heavier.
Chapter 11. Lessons and Teachers. As soon as Rand was out the door, Varen let loose the breath she had been holding. Once she had told Swan and Moiraine how dangerous he was. Neither had listened, and now the passage of little more than a year saw Swan stilled and probably dead, while Moiraine... The streets crawled with rumors about the dragon reborn in the royal palace, most beyond belief, and none that was credible mentioned an Aes Sedai. Moiraine might have decided to let him think he was going his own way, but she would never allow him to get far from her, not now when he was rising to such power, not now when the hazard he presented had grown so great. Had Rand turned on her more violently than he just had on them? He had aged since she last saw him. His face bore the tightness of struggle. The light knew he had reason enough, but could it be the struggle for sanity as well? So, Moiraine dead, Swan dead, the White Tower broken, and Rand possibly on the edge of madness. Varen tisked irritably. If you took risks, sometimes the bill came due when you least expected, in the last way you expected. Almost 70 years of delicate work on her part, and now it might all go for naught because of one young man. Even so, she had lived too long, been through too much to allow herself to be dismayed. First things first, take care of what can be done now before worrying too long over what might never be. That lesson had been forced on her, but she had taken it to heart. The first thing was to settle the young women down. They still huddled like a flock of sheep, weeping and holding on to one another and hiding their faces. She quite understood. This was not her first time to confront a man who could channel, much less the dragon reborn himself, and her stomach heaved as if on a ship at sea. She began with comforting words, patting a shoulder here, stroking hair there, trying to make her voice motherly, convincing them that Rand was gone, which in most cases meant convincing them to open their eyes, went a long way toward bringing relative calm. At least the sobbing subsided. But Jancy kept demanding piercingly that someone tell her Rand had been lying, that it had all been a trick, while Bodwin was just as shrill in wanting her brother found and rescued, Varen would have given a great deal to know where Matt was, and Larine blubbered that they had to leave Camelin immediately, on the minute. Varen drew one of the serving maids aside. A plain-faced woman at least 20 years older than any of the Two Rivers folk, she was wide-eyed, although wiping away tears with her apron and shaking. After requesting her name, Varen said, "Bring them all nice fresh tea, Azril, hot and with plenty of honey, and put a little brandy in it." Considering the younger women for a moment, she added, "Make it more than a little, a generous splash each. That should help soothe their nerves. And you and the other maids should have some as well." Azril sniffed and blinked and wiped her face, but she curtsied. Being sent about her regular duties seemed to lessen her tears, if not her fright. "Serve them in their rooms," Alana said, and Varen nodded agreement. A little sleep would do wonders. They were only a few hours out of bed, but brandy atop all their hard travel should do the trick. The order caused a commotion. "We can't hide here," Larine managed around sniffles and hiccups. "We have to go, now. He'll kill us." Bodwin's cheeks glistened damply, but her face had taken on a determined cast. That Two Rivers stubbornness was going to cause more than one of these young women trouble. "We have to find Matt. We can't leave him with a man who can... We can't. Even if it is Rand, we just can't." "I want to see Camelin," Jancy squeaked, though she was still trembling. The rest joined in right on top of those three, a handful tremulously supporting Jancy despite their fear, the majority adamantly in favor of departure. One of the young women from Watch Hill, a tall, pretty girl named Ella, fair-haired for the Two Rivers, began to wail again at the top of her lungs. It was all Varen could do not to smack the lot of them. There was excuse for the youngest, but Larine and Ella and the others with their hair braided were supposed to be women. Most had not been touched, and the danger was gone. On the other hand, they were all tired. Rand's visit had been a shock, and they were likely to face a good many more in the near future, so she held her exasperation in check. Alana did not. Even among greens she was noted for her quicksilver disposition, and it was worse of late. "You will go to your rooms now," she said coolly, but her voice was all that was cool. Varen sighed as the other Aes Sedai wove air and fire into illusion. Gasps filled the room, and already wide eyes bulged. There was no real need for this, but custom frowned on interfering with another sister publicly, and in truth, Varen found the sudden cessation of Ella's howls a relief. Her own nerves were far from their best. The untrained young women could not see the flows, of course. To them it seemed that Alana was growing taller with every word. Her voice grew with it, tone unchanged, but booming to match her apparent size. "You are to be novices, and the first lesson a novice must learn is to obey Aes Sedai, immediately, without complaint or quibble." Alana stood in the middle of the common room, unchanged, to Varen at least, but the illusion's head touched the ceiling beams. "Now run. Whoever is not in her room by the time I count five will regret it to her dying day. One, two..." Before she reached three, there was a mad squealing scramble on the stairs at the back of the room. It was a wonder no one was trampled. Alana did not bother to go beyond four. As the last of the Two Rivers girls vanished above, she released Sidar, the illusion vanished, and she gave a short, satisfied nod. Varen expected the young women would have to be cajoled even to peek out of their rooms now. Perhaps it was just as well. With matters as they were, she did not want anyone sneaking out for a view of Camelin and having to be retrieved. Of course, Alana had had her effect elsewhere, too. It was necessary to coax the maids out from under the tables where they had hidden, and the one who had collapsed trying to crawl to the kitchen had to be helped back onto her feet. They made no noise, they just trembled like leaves in a high wind. Varen had to give each one a little push to start her moving, and repeated her orders about the brandy and tea three times before Azril stopped gazing at her as if watching her sprout another head. The innkeeper's jaw was on his chest. His eyes seemed ready to fall out of his face. Varen looked at Tomas and motioned to the swaying fellow. Tomas gave her a wry look. He always did when she asked him to clear up trivial matters, yet he seldom questioned her orders, then clapped an arm around Master Dillam's shoulders and asked in a jovial tone whether the two of them might not share a few mugs of the inn's best wine. A good man, Tomas, skilled in surprising areas. Ivone had seated himself with his back against the wall and his boots up on a table. He managed to keep an eye on the door to the street and one on Alana. A very cautious eye on Alana. He was more than solicitous of her since Owen, her other warder, had died in the Two Rivers, and wisely more than wary of her temper, though she usually managed to control it better than she had today. Alana herself showed no interest in helping clean up the mess she had made. She stood in the middle of the common room looking at nothing, arms folded. To anyone not Aes Sedai, she probably seemed serenity incarnate. To Varen, Alana was a woman ready to explode. Varen touched her arm. "We must talk." Alana looked at her, eyes unreadable, then without a word glided toward the private dining room. Behind her, Varen heard Master Dillam say in a shaken voice, "Do you suppose I could claim the Dragon Reborn patronized my inn? He did come in, after all." For a brief moment she smiled. He would be all right, at least. Her smile vanished as she closed the door, sealing her and Alana in. Alana was already stalking back and forth in the small room, the silk of her divided skirts whispering like swords sliding from scabbards. There was no face of serenity now. "The gall of the man! The utter gall! Detaining us! Restricting us!" Varen watched her for a few moments before speaking. It had taken her 10 years to get over Balinor's death and bond Ivone. Alana's emotions had been raw since Owen's death, and she had held them in far too long. The occasional bouts of weeping she had allowed herself since departing the Two Rivers were not enough of a release. "I suppose he can keep us out of the inner city with guards at the gate, but he cannot really hold us in Camelin." That got the withering glance it deserved. They could leave with little difficulty. However much Rand had taught himself, there was little chance he had managed to discover wards, but it would mean relinquishing the Two Rivers girls. No Aes Sedai had found a trove like the Two Rivers in... Varen could not imagine how long. Perhaps not since the Trolloc Wars. Even young women of 18, the limit they had set for themselves, often found it hard to accept the strictures of the novitiate. Yet had they extended the limit only 5 years, she and Alana could have brought out twice as many, if not more. 5 of these girls, 5, had the spark inborn, including Matt's sister and Ella and young Jancy. They would channel eventually whether anyone taught them or not and be very strong. She and Alana had left 2 more behind to be gathered up in a year or so, when they were old enough to leave home. That was safe enough. A girl with the ability born in her very rarely manifested it before 15 without training. The rest showed exceptional promise, all of them. The Two Rivers was a load of pure gold. Now that she had the other woman's attention, Varen changed the subject. She certainly had no intention of abandoning those young women, or of moving any further from Rand than she had to. "Do you think he is right about rebels?" Alana's fists tightened for a moment on her skirts. "The possibility repels me. Could we really have come to..." She trailed off, sounding lost. Her shoulders slumped. Tears bubbled just beneath the surface, barely held in check. Now that the other woman's anger was dulled, Varen had questions to ask before sharpening it again. "Is there any prospect your butcher can tell you more of what has happened in Tarvalen if you dig?" The woman was not really Alana's. She was a Green Aja agent, discovered because Alana had noticed an emergency signal of some sort outside her shop. Not that Alana had told Varen what it was, of course. Varen certainly would not have revealed any brown signal. "No. She knows no more than the message she gave me, and that dried her mouth so she was hardly able to form words. All loyal Aes Sedai to return to the tower. All is forgiven. That was the essence of it, anyway." A flash of anger lit Alana's eyes, but only for a moment, and not as strong as before. If not for all those rumors, I'd never have let you know who she is. That and her emotions being unbalanced. At least she had stopped pacing. I know, Varin said, sitting down at the table, and I will respect the confidence. Now, you must agree that message makes the rumors true. The tower is broken. In all probability, there are rebels somewhere. The question is, what do we do about it? Alana looked at her as if she were mad. Small wonder. Swan had to have been deposed by the Hall of the Tower according to Tower law. Even a suggestion of going against Tower law was unthinkable. But then the Tower broken was unthinkable. If you have no answer now, think on it. And think on this. Swan Sanche was part of finding young Althor in the first place. Alana opened her mouth, doubtless to ask how Varin knew and whether she had been part of it too, but Varin gave her no chance. Only a simpleton would believe that role played no part in bringing her down. Coincidences that large do not exist. So think what Elida's view of Rand must be. She was red, remember. While you are thinking, answer me this. What were you at, bonding him like that? The question should not have caught Alana by surprise, yet it did. She hesitated, then drew out a chair and sat, arranging her skirts before she answered. It was the logical thing to do with him right there in front of us. It should have been done long ago. You could not, or would not. Like most Greens, she was somewhat amused by other Aja's insistence that each sister have only one warder. What Greens thought of the Reds having none was better left unsaid. They should all have been bonded at the first chance. They're too important to run loose, most of all. Color blossomed suddenly in her cheeks. It would be a good while yet before she had full control of her emotions again. Varin knew what caused the blushes. Alana had let her tongue run away with her. They had had Perrin under their eyes for long weeks while testing young women in the Two Rivers, but Alana had quickly gone silent on the subject of bonding him. The reason was as simple as a heated promise from Fael, delivered well out of Perrin's hearing, that if Alana did any such thing, she would not leave the Two Rivers alive. Had Fael known more of the bond between Aes Sedai and Gaideen, that threat would not have worked, yet her ignorance, if nothing else, had stayed Alana's hand. Very likely it had been frustration over that, plus the frayed state of her nerves that had led to what she did with Rand. Not only bonding him, but doing so without his permission. That had not been done in hundreds of years. Well, Varin thought dryly, I have broken a few customs in my time. Logical, she said, smiling to take the sting from her words. You sound like a wight. Well, now that you have him, what are you going to do with him? Considering the lessons he taught us. I am minded of a fireside tale when I was a girl about a woman who put saddle and bridle on a lion. She found it a fine and wonderful ride, but then discovered she could never dismount and never sleep. Shivering, Alana rubbed her arms. I still cannot believe he is so strong. If only we had linked sooner. And I tried. I failed. He is so strong. Varin barely kept from shivering herself. They could not have linked sooner, not unless Alana was suggesting they should have linked before she bonded him. Varin was not sure what the result of that would have been. In any case, it had been a series of extremely bad moments, from discovering that they could not cut him off from the true source, to the contemptuous ease with which he had shielded them, snapping their connections to Sidar like thread, both of them at once. Remarkable. How many would it take to shield and hold him? The full 13? That was only tradition, but it might be necessary with him. At any rate, that was speculation for another day. And then there is the matter of his amnesty. Alana's eyes widened. Surely you don't believe that. With every false dragon there have been tales that he was gathering men who could channel, all as false as the men. They wanted power for themselves, not to share it with other men. He is not a false dragon, Varin said quietly, and that may change everything. If one rumor is true, so can another be, and the amnesty has been on every tongue since Whitebridge. Even if it is, perhaps no one has come. No decent man wants to channel. If more than a handful wanted it, we would have had false dragons every week. He is Taviran, Alana. He draws what he needs to him. Alana's mouth worked, her hands now white-knuckled, fists on the table. Every shred of Aes Sedai tranquility gone, she trembled visibly. We can't allow men channeling, loosed on the world. If it is true, we must stop it. We must. She was on the point of springing up again, eyes flashing. Before we can decide what to do about them, Varen said calmly, we need to know where he is keeping them. The royal palace seems likely, but finding out may be difficult with the inner city denied to us. This is what I propose. Alana leaned forward intently. There was a good deal to be worked out, though most would come later. A good many questions to be answered later. Was Moiraine dead? And if so, how had she died? Were there rebels? And what should her and Alana's stance be concerning them? Should they try to deliver Rand to Elida, or to these rebels? Where were they? That knowledge would be valuable, whichever way the other questions were answered. How were they to make use of the so very fragile leash Alana had placed on Rand? Should one or both try to take Moiraine's place? For the first time since Alana had begun to let her emotions over Owen creep to the surface, Varen was glad she had held them in long enough to become so volatile. In her raveled condition, Alana was bound to be more amenable to guidance, and Varen knew exactly how some of those questions had to be answered. She did not think Alana would like some of those answers. Best not to let her learn them until it was too late to change them.
Rand raced back to the palace at a gallop, slowly outdistancing even the running Aiel, ignoring their shots as he ignored the shaken fists of people forced to leap out of Jaden's way, and the jumble of overturned sedan chairs and coaches locked wheel to wheel with market carts in his wake. Bashir and the Saldaeans barely kept up on their smaller horses. He was not sure why he was in such a hurry. The news he carried was not that urgent, but as the shakiness faded from his arms and legs, he realized more and more that he was aware of Alana still. He could feel her. It was as if she had crawled inside his head and taken up residence. If he could feel her, could she feel him the same way? What else could she do? What else? He had to get away from her. Pride! Luz Theron cackled, and for once Rand did not try to silence the voice. He had a different destination than the palace in mind, but traveling required you know the place you left from even better than the place you were going. At the south stable, he tossed the stallion's reins to a leather-vested groom and ran, his long legs carrying him ahead of the Saldaeans, down corridors where servants gaped at him, arresting bows and curtsies as he sped past. In the great hall, he grasped Saideen, opened the hole in air, and darted through into the clearing near the farm, letting the source go. Releasing a long breath, he sank to his knees in the dead leaves. The heat beneath the bare branches hammered him. He had lost the necessary concentration a long while back. He could still feel her, but it was fainter here, if a certainty that she was in that direction could be said to be faint. He could have pointed it out with his eyes closed. For a moment he took hold of Saideen again, that rage of fire and ice and sour slime. He held a sword in his hands, a sword made of fire. Of fire. A heron dark on the slightly curved red blade, though he did not recall thinking of it. Fire, but the long hilt felt cool and firm against his palms. The void made no difference, the power made no difference. Alana was still there, curled up in a corner of his brain, watching him. With a bitter laugh, he released the power again and knelt there. He had been so sure. Only two Aes Sedai. Of course he could handle them. He had handled Egwene and Elaine together. What could they possibly do to him? He realized he was still laughing. He did not seem able to stop. Well, it was funny, his fool pride, overconfidence. It had gotten him in trouble before, and more than him. He had been so sure that he and the 100 companions could seal the boar safely. Leaves crackled as he forced himself to his feet.
"That was not me," he said hoarsely. "That was not me! Get out of my head! All of you, get out of my head!"
Luz Theron's voice murmured indistinctly, distantly. Alana waited silently, patiently, in the back of his head. The voice seemed afraid of her. Deliberately, Rand brushed off the knees of his breeches. He would not surrender to this. Trust no Aes Sedai. He would remember that from now on.
A man without trust might as well be dead, Luz Theron giggled.
He would not surrender. Nothing had changed about the farm. Nothing and everything. The farmhouse and the barn were the same, the chickens and goats and cows. Sora Grady watched his arrival from a window, blank-faced and cold. She was the only woman now. All the other wives and sweethearts had gone with the men who failed Taim's testing. Taim had the students in a clear area of hard red clay and fitful weeds beyond the barn. All seven of them, aside from Sora's husband Jur, only Damer Flynn, Eben Hopwill, and Fedwin Moore remained from that first testing. The others were new, all looking almost as young as Fedwin and Eben. Except for white-haired Damer, the students sat in a line facing away from Rand. Damer sat in front of them, frowning as he stared at a head-sized stone 30 paces away.
"Now!"
Taim said, and Rand felt Damer seize Saidin, saw him inexpertly weave fire and earth. The stone exploded, and Damer and the other students threw themselves flat to escape flying shards. Not Taim. Stone splinters bounced off the shield of air he had thrown up at the last instant. Lifting his head warily, Damer wiped blood from a shallow gouge below his left eye. Rand's mouth tightened. It was only luck that none of those flying pieces had struck him. He glanced back at the farmhouse. Sora was still there, unhurt apparently, and still glaring at him. The chickens had hardly paused in their scratching. They seemed to be used to this.
"Perhaps you will remember what I say next time," Taim said calmly, letting his weave vanish. "Shield as you strike, or you may kill yourself."
He glanced at Rand as if he had been aware he was there all the time.
"Continue,"
he told the students, and walked toward Rand. His hawk-nosed face seemed to have a cruel cast today. As Damer sat down in the line, blotchy-faced Eben stood up, nervously tugging a big ear as he used air to lift another stone from a pile off to one side. His flows wobbled, and he dropped it once before setting it in place. "Is it safe to leave them alone like that?" Rand asked as Taim reached him. The second stone exploded like the first, but this time all of the students had woven shields. So had Taim, surrounding himself and Rand. Without a word, Rand took hold of Saidin again and made his own shield, forcing Taim's away from him. Taim's mouth quirked in that near smile.
"You said to push them, my lord dragon, so I push. I make them do everything with the power, the chores, everything. The newest got his first hot meal last night. If they can't heat it themselves, they eat cold. For most things, it still takes twice as long as doing it by hand, but they're learning the power as fast as they can, believe me. Of course, there still aren't very many." Ignoring the implied question, Rand looked around.
"Where's Haslan? Not drunk again? I told you, he's only to have wine at night."
Henry Haslan had been master of the sword for the Queen's guards, in charge of training recruits, until Ravan began remaking the guards, discarding everyone faithful to Morghese, or sending them off to fight in Kyrian. Too old for campaigning, Haslan had been handed his pension and shown the gate, and when news of Morghese's death spread through Camelin, he crawled into a wine jar. But he thought Ravan, Gabriel to him, had killed Morghese, not Rand, and he could teach, when he was sober.
"I sent him away," Taim said. "What good are swords?"
Another rock exploded.
I can barely avoid stabbing myself, and I've never felt the lack. They have the power now.
Kill him! Kill him now!
Luz Theron's voice echoed hollowly through the void. Rand stamped the echo out, but he could not stamp out the anger that suddenly seemed to shell around the emptiness containing him. The void kept his voice drained of emotion, though.
Find him, Taim, and bring him back. Tell him you have changed your mind. Tell the students that. Tell them whatever you choose, but I want him here, giving lessons every day. They need to be part of the world, not apart from it. What are they supposed to do if they can't channel? When you were shielded by the Aes Sedai, you might still have escaped if you knew how to use a sword, how to fight with your hands.
I did escape. Here I am.
Some of your followers broke you free, so I heard, else you'd have ended up in Tarvalen like Loghain, gentled. These men won't have followers. Find Haslan.
The other man bowed smoothly.
As my Lord Dragon commands. Was that what brought my Lord Dragon here? Haslan and swords?
The merest hint of contempt tinged his voice, but Rand ignored it.
There are Aes Sedai in Camelon. Trips to the city have to stop. Yours and the students, too. The Light only knows what will happen if one of them runs into an Aes Sedai and she recognizes what he is. Or, for that matter, when he recognized her, as he assuredly would.
He would probably run or strike out in a panic, and either would mark him. Either would doom him. From what Rand saw, Varen or Alana could wrap up any of the students like a child.
Taim shrugged. Doing an Aes Sedai's head like one of those rocks isn't beyond them even now. The weave is only a little different.
Glancing over his shoulder, he raised his voice.
Concentrate, Adley! Concentrate!
The lanky fellow standing in front of the other students, all arms and legs, gave a start and lost Sayadin, then fumbled it back again. Another rock exploded as Taim turned back to Rand.
For that matter, I can remove them myself, if you are not up to it.
If I wanted them dead, I'd have killed them. He thought he could do it, if they tried to kill him or gentle him. He hoped he could. But would they try either, after bonding him? That was one thing he did not intend to let Taim know. Even without Luz Theron's mutters, he did not trust the man enough to expose any weakness he could hide.
Light, what sort of hold did I let Alana get on me?
If the time comes to kill Aes Sedai, I'll let you know. Until then, no one is to so much as shout at one, unless she's trying to take his head off. In fact, you're all to stay as far from Aes Sedai as you can. I want no incidents, nothing to put them against me.
You think they are not already? Taim murmured.
Again, Rand ignored him. This time because he was not sure of the answer. And I don't want anybody dead or gentle because his head is too big for his cap. Make sure they know it. I hold you responsible for them.
As you wish,
Taim said with another shrug.
Some will die sooner or later, unless you mean to keep them cooped up here forever. Even if you do, some will probably die. It's almost unavoidable, unless I slow the lessons. You would not have to husband them so, if you let me go out looking.
There it was again. Rand looked at the students. A sweating, pale-haired youth with blue eyes was having a hard time moving a stone into place. He kept losing Sayadin, and the rock moved by small leaps across the ground. In a few hours, the wagon would be coming out from the palace with the applicants, who had arrived since midday yesterday. Four this time. Some days it was only three or two, though the numbers had been increasing generally. 18 since he brought Taim out here 7 days ago, and only three of them could learn to channel. Taim insisted. That was a remarkable number, considering that they simply walked into Camelon looking for the opportunity. He had also pointed out more than once that at this rate they could match the tower in 6 years or so. Rand needed no reminders that he did not have 6 years, and he did not have time to let them train more slowly.
How would you do it? Using gateways?
Taim had picked that up right away. He was very quick with everything Rand showed him.
I can visit 2 or even 3 villages a day. Villages will be easier in the beginning than even small towns. I'll leave Flynn to watch the lessons. He's the furthest along despite what you saw, and take Grady or Hopwill or more. You'll have to supply some decent horses. The nag that pulls our cart won't do.
What do you intend, though? Just ride in and announce that you're looking for men who want to channel? You'll be lucky if the villagers don't try to hang you.
I can be a little more circumspect than that, Taim said dryly.
I will say I'm recruiting men to follow the Dragon Reborn.
A little more circumspect? Not much.
That should frighten the people just enough to keep them from my throat, long enough to gather in whoever is willing. And it calls out anybody who isn't ready to support you. I don't suppose you mean to train up men who'll turn on you the first chance they find.
He raised a questioning eyebrow, but did not wait for the unnecessary answer.
Once I have them safely away from the village, I can bring them here through a gateway. Some might panic, but they should not be too hard to handle. Once they've agreed to follow a man who can channel, they can hardly balk at letting me test them. Those who fail, I'll send on to Camelon. It's time you started raising an army of your own instead of depending on others. Bashir could change his mind. He will, if Queen Tenobia tells him to. And who can know what those so-called Aiel will do?
This time he paused, but Rand held his tongue. He had thought along the same lines himself, if certainly not about the Aiel, but Taim had no need to know that. After a moment, the man went on, as if he had never brought up the subject.
I'll make you a wager. You name the price. The first day I recruit, I'll find as many men who can learn as walk into Camelon in a month on their own. Once Flynn and some of the others are ready to go out without me, he spread his hands. I will match the White Tower for you in less than a year, and every man a weapon.
Rand hesitated. Letting Taim go off was a risk. The man was too aggressive. What would he do if he came across an Aes Sedai on one of his recruiting trips? Maybe he would keep his word and spare her life, but what if she discovered what he was? What if she shielded and captured him? That was a loss Rand could not afford. He could not train students and do everything else he had to do as well.
6 years to match the tower. If Aes Sedai did not find this place first and destroy it and the students before they knew enough to defend themselves. Or less than a year.
Finally, he nodded. Luz Theron's voice was a mad buzz in the distance.
You will have your horses.
Chapter 12. Questions and Answers. Well, Nynaeve said as patiently as she could. Keeping her hands in her lap was an effort, as was sitting still on her bed. She stifled a yawn. The hour was early, and she had not slept well for 3 nights now. The wicker cage was empty, the song sparrow set free. She wished she was free. Well? Elaine was kneeling on her own bed, head and shoulders out the window into the tiny alley behind the house. From there she had just the slimmest line of sight to the rear of the little tower, where most of the sitters were already receiving the tower envoy this morning. A slight view, but enough to see a bit of the ward against eavesdropping that enclosed the inn. It was the sort that stopped anyone who was trying to listen with the power, the price of sharing knowledge. After a moment Elaine sat back on her heels, frustration painting her face. Nothing. You said those flows could slip through undetected. I don't think I was noticed, but I certainly heard nothing. That last was directed at Mogedion, on their rickety stool in a corner. The woman's lack of sweat irritated Nynaeve no end. She claimed it took time working with the power before you could achieve the detachment necessary to ignore heat or cold, not much better than the Aes Sedai's vague promises that it would come eventually. Nynaeve and Elaine dripped sweat. Mogedion looked cool as an early spring day, and light it grated. I said they should. Mogedion's dark eyes darted defensively, though mostly she kept her gaze on Elaine. She always concentrated on whoever wore the Eidom bracelet. Should. There are thousands of ways to spin wards. It can take days to spin a hole through one. Nynaeve held her tongue, but barely. They'd been trying for days. This was the third since Tarna Fear's arrival, and the hall still held the Red Sister's message from Elida closely. Well, Shiriam and Mirella and that lot knew. Nynaeve would not have been surprised if they had known before the hall did, but even Swan and Lyanna had been shut outside of those daily meetings. At least, they had professed to be. Nynaeve realized she was plucking at her skirts and stilled her hands. Somehow they had to find out what Elida wanted, and, more importantly, the hall's answer. They had to, somehow. "I have to go," Elaine sighed. "I must show some more sisters how I make Turangreal." Very few Aes Sedai in Salidar showed the knack, but they all wanted to learn, and most seemed to think they could, once they made Elaine demonstrate often enough. "You might as well take this," she added, unfastening the bracelet. "I want to try something new in the making after the sisters are done with me, and then I have a novice class." She did not sound happy about that either, not the way she had before the first time. After every class she came back so full of irritation she bristled like a cat. The youngest girls were over-eager, leaping ahead to things they had no idea how to handle, often without asking first. And the oldest, although a little more cautious, were much more likely to argue, or plain balk at an order from a woman 6 or 7 years their junior. Elaine had taken to muttering, "fool novices," and "headstrong idiots," like an accepted of 10 years. "You can have time for questions. Maybe you'll have more luck with how to detect a man than I have." Nynaeve shook her head. "I'm supposed to help Janya and Delana with their notes this morning." She could not help grimacing. Delana was a sitter for the Grey Aja, as Janya was for the Brown, but Nynaeve would get no glimmer of anything from them. "And then I have another lesson from Theodrin." Another waste of time. Everybody in Salidar was wasting time. "Wear it," she said, as Elaine started to hang the bracelet on a wall peg with their clothes. The golden-haired woman gave an affected sigh, but refastened the bracelet. In Nynaeve's opinion, Elaine was entirely too trusting of the Eidom. True, so long as the necklace remained on Mogedion's neck, any woman able to channel could find her with the bracelet and control her. If no one wore the bracelet, she could not move more than a dozen paces from it without falling to her knees retching. And the same if she shifted the bracelet more than a few inches from where it had been left, or tried to unfasten the necklace herself. Maybe it would hold her even on the peg, but maybe one of the Forsaken could reason a way around that, given enough chances. Once, in Tanchico, Nynaeve had left Mogedion shielded and bound with the power for just a few moments, and she managed to escape. The how of that had been one of the first things Nynaeve questioned her about once she was captured again, though prying out an answer almost required wringing her neck. A tied-off shield was vulnerable, it seemed, if the woman shielded had a little time and patience. Elaine insisted that would not work against the Eidom. There was no knot to attack, and with the necklace around her neck, Mogedion could not even try to touch Saidar without permission. But Nynaeve preferred taking no chances. "Do your copying slowly," Elaine said. "I've copied for Delana before. She hates blots or mistakes. She'll make you do it over 50 times to get a clean page if need be." Nynaeve scowled. Her own hand might not be as clean and delicate as Elaine's, but she was not some lout who had just learned which end of the pen to dip in the ink. The younger woman took no notice, simply slipped out of the room with a final smile. Maybe she'd only meant to be helpful. If the Aes Sedai ever learned how much Nynaeve hated copying, they would start assigning it to her for punishment. "Perhaps you ought to go to Althor," Mogedion said abruptly. She was sitting differently, straighter, her dark eyes held steady on Nynaeve's. "Why?" "What do you mean?" Nynaeve demanded. "You and Elaine should go to Camelin, to Rand. She could be queen, and you..." Mogedion's smile was not at all pleasant. Sooner or later they will sit you down and dig for how you can make all these marvelous discoveries yet quake like a girl caught with stolen sweets when you try to channel for them. I do not... She was not going to explain herself. Not to this woman. Why was Mogedion so forward all of a sudden? Just you remember, whatever happens to me if they find out the truth, your head will be on the chopping block before the week is done. Whereas you will have much longer to suffer. Semirag once made a man scream his every waking hour for 5 years. She even kept him sane, but in the end even she could not keep his heart beating. I doubt any of these children have a tenth of Semirag's skill, but you may find out firsthand how much they do have. How could the woman be saying this? Her normal cringing anxiety had been shed like a snakeskin. They could have been two equals discussing something of casual interest. No worse. Mogedion's attitude said it was of casual interest to her, but dire to Nynaeve. Nynaeve wished she had the bracelet. It would have been a comfort. Mogedion's emotions could not possibly be as cool and calm as her face and her voice. Nynaeve's breath caught. The bracelet. That was it. The bracelet was not in the room. A ball of ice formed in the pit of her stomach. The sweat suddenly seemed to roll more heavily down her face. Logically, whether the bracelet was there or not made no difference. Elaine had it on. Please, Light, don't let her have taken it off. And the other half of the eidam was firmly around Mogedion's neck. Only logic had nothing to do with it. Nynaeve had never been alone with the woman without the bracelet there. Or rather, the only times she had ended in near total disaster. Mogedion had not been wearing the eidam then, but that made no difference either. She was one of the Forsaken. They were alone, and Nynaeve had no way to control her. She gripped her skirts to keep from gripping her belt knife. Mogedion's smile deepened as if she had read her thoughts. In this you can be sure I have your best interests at heart. This, her hand hovered near the necklace for a moment, carefully not touching it, will hold me in Camelin as well as here. Slavery there is better than death here. But don't take too long to decide. If these so-called Aes Sedai resolve to return to the tower, what better gift to take the new Amyrlin's seat than you? A woman so close to Randall Thor, and Elaine. If he feels for her half what she does for him, holding her will tie a cord to him he'll never be able to cut. Nynaeve stood, forcing her knees straight. You can make the beds and clean the room now. I expect to find it spotless when I return. How much time do you have? Mogedion said before she reached the door. The woman could have been asking whether the water was hot for tea. A few more days at most before they send their answer back to Tar Valon? A few hours? How will they balance Randall Thor and even Elida's supposed crimes against making their precious white tower whole again? Pay special attention to the chamber pots, Nynaeve said without turning around. I want them clean this time. She left before Mogedion could say anything else, shutting the door behind her firmly. She leaned back against the rough wooden planks, breathing deeply in the cramped, windowless hallway. Dipping into her belt pouch, she plucked out a small sack and popped two frilly goosemint leaves into her mouth. Goosemint took time to soothe a burning belly, but she chewed and swallowed as though haste could make it work faster. The last few moments had been one blow after another, as Mogedion shattered one thing after another that she had known. Even with all her distrust, she had believed the woman cowed. False. Oh, Light, false. She'd been sure Mogedion knew almost as little about Elaine and Rand as the Aes Sedai did. False. And for her to suggest going to him... They had talked too freely in front of her. What else had they let slip? And what use could Mogedion make of it? Another accepted entered the dim hall from the small house's front room, and Nynaeve straightened, tucking the goosemint away and smoothing her dress. Every room but the front one had been made into sleeping quarters, and accepted and servants filled them, three or four to a room not much larger than the one behind her, and sometimes two to a bed. The other accepted was a slight woman, almost wispy, with grey eyes and a quick grin. An Ilianer, Imara did not like Swan or Lyanna, which Nynaeve found easy to understand, and thought they should be sent away, decently, as she put it, the way stilled women always had been. But aside from that, she was pleasant, not even resenting Elaine and Nynaeve's extra space, or Marigan doing their chores. No few did. "I hear you do be copying for Janya and Delana," she said in her high-pitched voice, brushing past toward her own room. "Take my advice and write as fast as you can. Janya does care more for getting all her words down than for a few smudges." Nynaeve glared at Imara's back. "Write slow for Delana, write fast for Janya." A fine lot of counsel that added up to. In any case, she could not make herself worry about blotting copy now, or even about Mogedion, until she had a chance to talk it over with Elaine. Shaking her head and muttering under her breath, she stalked outside. Maybe she had been taking things for granted, letting things slip, but it was time to give herself a good shake and stop it. She knew who she had to find. In the last few days, a quiet had settled over Salidar, although the streets were just as crowded. For one thing, the forges outside the village were silent. Everyone had been told to guard their tongues while Tarna was there, about the embassy on its way to Camelin, about Loghain, who was safely tucked away in one of the soldiers' camps, even about the soldiers themselves, and why they had been gathered. It left most fearful of saying anything at all above a whisper. The low buzz of talk had an anxious note. Everyone was affected. Servants who normally hurried now moved hesitantly, casting fearful glances over their shoulders. Even Aes Sedai seemed wary beneath their calm, eyeing each other in a calculating manner. There were few soldiers in the streets now, as though Tarna had not seen her fill the first day and come to her own conclusions. The wrong answer to the hall would put nooses around all their necks. Even rulers and nobles who wanted to stand aside from the tower troubles would likely hang any soldiers they laid hands on, just to keep the notion of rebellion from spreading. Feeling the uncertainty, those few wore carefully blank faces or anxious frowns, except for Gareth Bryn, waiting patiently in front of the little tower. He had been there every day, from before the sitters arrived until they left. She thought he wanted to make sure they remembered him and what he was doing for them. The one time she had seen the sitters coming out, they had not appeared pleased to see him. Only the warders seemed no different for the Red Sisters' arrival. The warders and the children. Nynaeve gave a start when three small girls burst up in front of her like quail, ribbons in their hair, sweaty, dusty, and laughing as they ran. The children did not know what Salidar waited for, and likely would not understand if they did know. Each warder would follow his Aes Sedai, whatever she decided and wherever she went, and never turn a hair. Most of the muted talk seemed to be about the weather. That and tales from elsewhere about strange happenings, two-headed calves talking, and men smothered by swarms of flies, all the children in a village disappearing in the middle of the night, and people struck dead by something unseen in broad daylight. Anyone who could think clearly knew that the drought and unseasonable heat were the Dark One's hand touching the world, but even most Aes Sedai doubted Elaine and Nynaeve's claims that the other happenings were as real, that bubbles of evil were rising from the Dark One's prison as the seals weakened, rising and drifting along the pattern till they burst. Most people could not think clearly. Some blamed it all on Rand. Some said the Creator was displeased that the world had not gathered behind the Dragon Reborn, or displeased that the Aes Sedai had not captured and gentled him, or displeased that Aes Sedai were opposing a seated Ammerlin. Nynaeve had heard people say the weather would come right as soon as the tower was whole again. She pushed through the crowd. "Swear it's true," murmured a cook all flour to her elbows. "There's a White Cloak army massed the other side the Eldar, just waiting word from Elida to attack." Aside from the weather and two-headed calves, tales of White Cloaks outnumbered every other sort. But White Cloaks waiting orders from Elida? The heat had melted the woman's brains. "The lights stand witness, it's true," a grizzled carter muttered to a frowning woman whose well-cut wool dress marked her an Aes Sedai's maid. "Elida's dead. The Reds come to summon Shiriam to be the new Ammerlin." The woman nodded, accepting every word of it. "I say Elida's a fine Ammerlin," one rough-coated man said, shifting a bundle of faggots on his shoulder. "As fine as any." He did not murmur to his companion. He spoke loudly, trying hard not to look around to see who had heard him. Nynaeve's mouth twisted sourly. He wanted to be overheard. How had Elida discovered Salidar so quickly? Tarna must have left Tar Valon soon after Aes Sedai began gathering in the village. Swan had pointed out darkly that a goodly number of Blue Sisters were still missing. The original message to gather in Salidar had been aimed at Blues, and Alviarin was accomplished at applying the question. A stomach-turning thought, but not as wrenching as the most common explanation. Secret supporters of Elida here in Salidar. Everybody looked sideways at everybody else, and the woodman was not the first Nynaeve had heard say much the same, in the same manner. Aes Sedai might not say it, but Nynaeve suspected some wanted to. It all stirred Salidar into a stew, and not a tasty one. It made what she was doing even more right. Finding who she sought took time. She needed groups of children playing, and there were not many children in Salidar. Sure enough, Birgitta was watching five boys scramble about the street, throwing a small bag of pebbles at each other, all laughing uproariously whenever one of them was hit, including the one hit. It made no more sense than most boys' games, or men's. Birgitta was not alone, of course. She seldom was, unless she made an effort to be. Arena stood at her shoulder, dabbing at the perspiration streaming down her face, and trying not to show boredom with the children. A year or two younger than Nynaeve, Arena wore her dark hair in a braid patterned after Birgitta's golden one, though still little below her shoulders. Birgitta's hung properly to the waist. Her clothes copied Birgitta, too, a waist-length coat of pale grey and voluminous bronze-coloured trousers, gathered at the ankle above short boots with raised heels, as did the bow she carried and the quiver at her waist. Nynaeve did not think Arena had ever held a bow before meeting Birgitta. She ignored the woman. "I need to talk to you," she told Birgitta. "Alone." Arena glanced at her, blue eyes close to contempt. "I'd think you'd be wearing your shawl this fine day, Nynaeve. Oh, my, you seem to be sweating like a horse. Why is that?" Nynaeve's face tightened. She had befriended the woman before Birgitta had, but the friendship melted on reaching Salidar. Learning that Nynaeve was not full Aes Sedai brought something more than disappointment. Only a request from Birgitta had held Arena back from informing the Aes Sedai that she had masqueraded as one. Besides, Arena had taken the oaths as a hunter for the Horn, and Birgitta was certainly a better model for that life than Nynaeve. To think she had once pitied the woman her bruises. "From your face," Birgitta said with a sweaty grin, "either you're ready to strangle somebody, probably Arena here, or else your dress fell off in the middle of a pack of soldiers and you weren't wearing a shift." Arena snorted a laugh, but she looked shocked. Why she should, Nynaeve did not know. The woman had had plenty of time to become used to Birgitta's so-called sense of humor, more suited as it was to some unshaven man with his nose in a mug and his belly full of ale. Nynaeve studied the boys' play for a minute to give her irritation a chance to die down. Worse than useless to let herself get angry when she had a favor to ask. Sieve and Jarl were among the boys dodging and tossing the bag. The Yellows had been right about them. Time was what they had needed. After close to 2 months in Salidar with other children and no fear, they laughed and shouted as loudly as the rest. A sudden thought hit her like a hammer. Marigan still looked after them, if grudgingly, saw that they were bathed and fed, but now that they were talking again, at any time they might tell that the woman was not their mother. Perhaps they already had. That might not cause questions, but then again it might, and questions could bring the house of twigs they had built tumbling down on their heads. The ball of ice reappeared in the pit of Nynaeve's belly. Why had she not thought of this before? She gave a start as Birgitta touched her arm. "What is wrong, Nynaeve? You look as though your best friend died and cursed you with her last breath." Arena was striding away, stiff-backed, casting one look over her shoulder at them. The woman could watch Birgitta drink and flirt with men without turning a hair, and even try to emulate her, yet she bristled every time Birgitta wanted to be alone with Elaine or Nynaeve. Men were no threat. Only women could be friends in Arena's book, but only she could be Birgitta's friend. The idea of having two friends seemed foreign to her. Well, enough and be done with her. "Could you get horses for us?" Nynaeve tried to steady her voice. That was not what she had come to ask, but Siv and Jarl made it an excellent question. "How long will it take?" Birgitta drew her out of the street to the mouth of a narrow alley between two weathered houses and looked around carefully before answering. No one was close enough to overhear or pay them any mind. "A day or two. Uno was just telling me—" "Not Uno. We will leave him out of this. Just you, me, Elaine, and Marigan. Unless Tom and Julin return in time. And Arena, I suppose, if you insist." "Arena's a fool some ways," Birgitta said slowly. "But life will wring that out of her, or wring her out. You know I'd never insist on her going along if you and Elaine don't want her." Nynaeve kept silent. The woman was behaving as if she was the jealous one. It was none of her affair if Birgitta wanted to take up with somebody as fickle as Arena. Rubbing a knuckle across her lips, Birgitta frowned. "Tom and Julin are good men, but the best way to avoid trouble is to make sure no one wants to trouble you. A dozen or so Shinarans in armor, or out, would go a long way toward that. I don't understand you and Uno. He is tough, and he'd follow you and Elaine into the pit of doom." A sudden grin bloomed on her face. "Besides, he's a well-set-up fellow." "We do not need anyone to hold our hands," Nynaeve told her stiffly. "Well set up?" That painted eye patch flashed queasily across her mind, and the scars. The woman had the strangest taste in men. "We can handle anything that comes our way. I'd think we've already proved that, if it needed proof." "I know we can, Nynaeve, but we'll draw trouble like flies to a midden. Altara's at a slow boil. Every day brings another tale of dragonsworn, and I'll wager my best silk dress against one of your old shifts that half of them are really just brigands who'll see four women alone as easy meat. We will have to prove we're not every second day. Mirandy's worse, I hear, full of dragonsworn and bandits and refugees from Kyrian, afraid the dragon reborn will fall on them any day. I assume you don't mean to cross over into Amadicia. I assume it's Camelin." Her intricate braid swung slightly as she tilted her head and raised a questioning eyebrow. "Does Elaine agree with you about Uno?" "She will," Nynaeve muttered. "I see. Well, when she does, I will procure as many horses as we need. But I want her to tell me why we should not take Uno." The unyielding finality of her tone heated Nynaeve's face angrily. If she did ask Elaine ever so sweetly to tell Birgitta that Uno was to stay here, they might well find him waiting down the road, and Birgitta all amazement over how he knew they were going and which way. The woman might be Elaine's warder, but sometimes Nynaeve wondered which of them was really in charge. When she found Lan, when, not if, she intended to make him swear oaths fit to curl his hair that he would abide by her decisions. She drew deep, calming breaths. No point arguing with a stone wall. She might as well get on to the reason she had hunted up Birgitta in the first place. Casually, she took a step deeper into the narrow alley, making the other woman follow. Brown stubble remained underfoot from the brush that had been cleared out of it. Trying to appear offhanded, she studied the press in the street. Still no one giving them more than a glance. She lowered her voice anyway. "We need to know what Tarna is telling the hall, and what they're telling her. Elaine and I have tried to find out, but they ward the meetings against eavesdropping. Only with the power, though. They're so caught up that someone can listen in that way, they seem to have forgotten about pressing an ear to a door. If someone were to—" Birgitta cut her off in a flat voice. "No." "At least consider it. Elaine or I are 10 times as likely to be caught as you." She thought of adding that Elaine was rather clever, but the other woman sniffed. "I said no. You've been many things since I've known you, Nynaeve, but never silly. Light, they'll announce it to everyone in a day or two." "We need to know now," Nynaeve hissed, swallowing. You man-brained idiot! Silly? Of course she had never been silly. She must not be angry. If she could convince Elaine to go, they might not be here in a day or two. Best not to open that bag of snakes again. Shuddering, a touch ostentatiously, Nynaeve thought, Birgitta leaned on her bow. I was caught spying on Aes Sedai once. They tossed me out on my ear 3 days later, and I left Shaemul as fast as I could reach a horse. I will not go through that to gain you a day you don't need. Nynaeve remained calm. She made an effort to maintain a smooth face, to not grind her teeth, to not yank her braid. She was calm. I never heard any story about you spying on Aes Sedai. As soon as the words were out of her mouth, she wanted them back. The core of Birgitta's secret was that she was the Birgitta in the stories. Nothing that made that connection was ever to be mentioned. For a moment, Birgitta's face was stone, hiding everything inside. It was enough to make Nynaeve shiver. There was too much pain wrapped in the other woman's secret. Finally, stone became flesh once more, and Birgitta sighed. Time changes things. I hardly recognize half those tales myself, and the other half not at all. We'll not speak of it again. That was very plainly not a suggestion. Nynaeve opened her mouth with no clear idea of what to say. Her own debt to Birgitta meant she did not want to poke at the woman's pain, but to be balked over two simple requests. And a third woman's voice spoke suddenly from the mouth of the alley. Nynaeve, Janya and Delana want you right this minute. Nynaeve tried to climb straight up into the air. Her heart tried to climb through the roof of her mouth. In the mouth of the alley, novice-clad Nicola looked startled for a moment. So did Birgitta. Then she studied her bow, looking amused. Nynaeve had to swallow twice before she could force a word out. How much had the woman heard? If you think that's any way to speak to an accepted Nicola, you had best learn better quickly, or you will be taught. It was a properly Aes Sedai thing to say, but the slender woman's dark eyes surveyed Nynaeve, weighing and measuring. I am sorry, accepted, she said, curtsying. I will try to be more careful. The curtsy was just exactly deep enough for an accepted, to the inch, and if the tone was cool, it was not cool enough to call her down for. Irena had not been the only traveling companion disappointed by learning the truth about Elaine and Nynaeve, but Nicola had agreed to keep the secret, as if surprised they thought they had to ask. Then, after testing revealed she could learn to channel, the weighing and measuring entered her eyes. Nynaeve understood all too well. Nicola lacked the inborn spark. Without teaching, she would never have touched Saidar. But already her promise was spoken of, the strength she would have one day if she applied herself. 2 years earlier, with more potential than any novice in centuries, she would have caused real excitement. That was before Elaine and Egwene, and Nynaeve herself, though. Nicola never said anything, yet Nynaeve was certain she was determined to match Elaine and Nynaeve, if not better them. She never stepped over the line of propriety, but she often walked it. Nynaeve gave her a sharp nod. Understanding did not stop her wanting to dose the fool woman with triple-strength sheep's tongue root for pure idiocy. See that you do. Go tell the Aes Sedai I'll be with them in just a few moments. Nicola curtsied again, but as she turned away, Nynaeve said, Wait. The woman stopped immediately. It was not there now, but for an instant Nynaeve had been sure she saw a flash of satisfaction. Did you tell me everything? I was sent to tell you to come, accepted, and I did. Bland as water a week in the pitcher. What did they say? Their exact words. Exact words, accepted? I don't know that I can remember their exact words, but I'll try. Remember it was them who said it. I'm only repeating. Janya Sedai said something like, If that fool girl doesn't show up soon, I vow she won't be able to sit down comfortably until she's old enough to be a grandmother. And Delana Sedai said, She'll be that old before she decides to appear. If she isn't here inside the quarter hour, I will turn her hide into dust rags. Her eyes were innocence itself. That was about 20 minutes ago, accepted. Maybe a little longer. Nynaeve very nearly swallowed again. Just because Aes Sedai could not lie did not mean every threat had to be taken literally, but sometimes a sparrow would starve on the difference. With anybody but Nicola, she would have yelped, "Oh, light!" and scurried. Not under those eyes. Not in front of a woman who seemed to be storing up a list of her weaknesses. In that case, I suppose there's no need for you to run ahead of me. Go on about your duties. Turning her back on Nicola's curtsy as if she had no care in the world, she spoke to Birgitta. I'll talk with you later. I suggest you do nothing about the matter until then. With luck, that might keep her away from Uno. With a great deal of luck. I will consider your suggestion, Birgitta said gravely, but there was nothing grave about the mixture of sympathy and amusement on her face. The woman knew Aes Sedai. In some ways she knew more about Aes Sedai than any Aes Sedai. There was nothing for it but to accept and hope. As Nynaeve started up the street, Nicola fell in beside her. I told you to be about your duties. They said to come back when I found you accepted. Is that one of your herbs? Why do you use herbs? Is it because you can't... Forgive me, accepted. I should not have mentioned that. Nynaeve blinked at the sack of goose mint in her hand. She did not remember taking it out, and stuffed it back in her pouch. She wanted to chew the whole sackful of leaves. She ignored the apology and its cause. One was surely as false as the other was deliberate. I use herbs because healing isn't always necessary. Would the Yellows disapprove if that got back to them? They were contemptuous of herbs. They only seemed interested in illnesses that did need healing. Or those where it was not cracking pecans with a sledgehammer anyway. What was she doing, worrying over what she said to Nicola in case it should be carried to Aes Sedai? The woman was a novice, no matter how she looked at her and Elaine. It did not matter how she looked at them. "Keep quiet," she said irritably. "I want to think." Nicola did keep quiet as they wended their way through the crowded streets, but it seemed to Nynaeve that the woman's steps dragged. Perhaps it was only imagination, but Nynaeve's knees began to ache from the effort of not outpacing her. Under no circumstances would she let Nicola see her even appear to hurry. The situation set a slow burn inside her. Of everybody who could have been sent to fetch her, it was hard to imagine anyone worse than Nicola and her eyes. Birgitta was probably running off to find Uno right that minute. The sitters were probably telling Tarna they were ready to kneel and kiss Elida's ring. Sieve and Jarl were probably telling Shiriam they did not know Marigan from a wild goose. It had been that kind of day, and the molten sun stood only a quarter toward its peak in the cloudless sky. Janya and Delana were waiting in the front room of the small house they shared with three other Aes Sedai, each with her own bedroom, of course. Each Aja had a house for its meetings, but Aes Sedai were scattered about through the village depending on when they had come in. Frowning at the floor, lips pursed, Janya appeared unaware of their arrival. Pale-haired Delana, though, her hair was so fair there was no telling whether there was white in it or not. Delana focused her equally pale blue eyes on them as soon as they set foot inside the door. Nicola jumped. Nynaeve would have felt better about that, had she not done the same. Usually the stout gray's eyes were no different from any other Aes Sedai's, but when she really focused on you, it was as if nothing existed but you. Some said Delana was successful as a mediator because both sides would agree just to make her stop staring at them. You started thinking of what you had done wrong, even if you had done nothing. The list that popped into Nynaeve's head made her curtsy as deeply as Nicola before she knew it. Ah, Janya said, blinking as if they had sprung out of the floor. There you are. Forgive me for being late, Nynaeve said hastily. Let Nicola hear whatever she wanted. Delana was staring at her, not Nicola. I lost track of the time and... No matter. Delana's voice was deep for a woman, her accent a throaty echo of Uno's Shinaran. It was oddly melodious in such a round woman, but then Delana was oddly graceful for one so stout. "Nicola, be off with you. You'll be running errands for Faelaine until your next lesson." Nicola wasted no time dropping another curtsy and darting out. Maybe she had wanted to hear what the Aes Sedai said to Nynaeve for being late, but no one walked any lines with Aes Sedai. Nynaeve would not have cared if Nicola sprouted wings. She had just realized there was no inkpot on the table where the Aes Sedai took their meals, no sand bowl, no pen, no paper, none of what she would need. Had she been supposed to bring it? Delana was still staring at her. The woman never stared at anyone that long. She never stared at all unless she had a reason. "Would you like cool mint tea?" Janya said, and it was Nynaeve's turn to blink. "I do think tea is comforting. It smooths conversation, I always find." Not waiting for an answer, the bird-like brown sister began filling mismatched cups from a blue-striped teapot on the sideboard. A rock stood in place of one of the sideboard's legs. Aes Sedai might have more room, but their furnishings were just as battered. "Delana and I decided our notes could wait for another time. We will just talk instead. Honey? I prefer it without myself. All that sweetness ruins the flavor. Young women always want their honey. Such wonderful things you've been doing, you and Elaine." A loud throat clearing made her look at Delana questioningly. After a moment, Janya said, "Ah, yes." Delana had pulled one of the chairs from the table into the middle of the bare floor, one cane-bottomed chair. From the moment Janya mentioned conversation, Nynaeve had known that that was not at all what was going to happen. Delana motioned to the chair, and Nynaeve took a seat on the very edge of it, accepting a cup on a chipped saucer from Janya with a murmured, "Thank you, Aes Sedai." She did not have long to wait. "Tell us about Randall Thor," Janya said. She appeared ready to say more, but Delana cleared her throat again. Janya blinked and fell silent, sipping her tea. They stood to either side of Nynaeve's chair. Delana glanced at her, then sighed and channeled the third cup to herself. It floated across the room. Delana fixed on her again in that way that seemed to bore holes in your head, Janya apparently lost in thought and maybe not seeing her at all. "I've told you everything I know," Nynaeve sighed. "Well, told Aes Sedai, anyway. She had, too. Nothing she knew could harm him. Not any more than knowing what he was, anyway. And it might help if she could make the sisters see him as a man. Not a man who could channel, just a man. Not an easy task with the dragon reborn. I don't know any more." "Don't sulk," Delana snapped. "And don't fidget." Nynaeve set her cup back in the saucer and wiped her wrist on her skirt. "Child," Janya said, her tone all compassion. "I know you think you've told all you know, but Delana, I cannot think you would hold back on purpose."
"Why would she not?" Delana barked. "Born in the same village, watched him grow up. Her loyalties may be more to him than to the White Tower."
That razor gaze descended on Nynaeve again.
"Tell us something you haven't told before. I've heard all your stories, girl, so I will know."
"Try, child. I'm sure you don't want to make Delana angry with you. Why—"
Janya cut off at another throat clearing. Nynaeve hoped they thought her teacup rattling meant she was rattled as well. Dragged here, terrified. No, not terrified, but worried at least, over how angry they might be. And now this. Being around Aes Sedai taught you to listen carefully. You still might not catch what they really meant, but you had a better chance than if you listened with half an ear, the way most people usually did. Neither one had really said they thought she was keeping anything back. They just intended to frighten her on the chance that they might shake something else loose. She was not afraid of them. Well, not much. She was furious. "When he was a boy," she said carefully, "he would accept his punishment without any argument if he thought he deserved it, but if he didn't think so, he fought every step of the way." Delana snorted. "You've told that to everyone who would listen. Something else, quickly." "You can lead him or convince him, but he won't be pushed.
He digs in his heels if he thinks you're... And that. Hands on broad hips, Delana bent down until her head was level with Nynaeve's. Nynaeve almost wished she had Nicola staring at her again. Something you've not told every cook and laundress in Salidar. Do try, child, Janya said, and for a wonder left it at that. They dug away, Janya prompting sympathetically, Delana boring without mercy, and Nynaeve brought up every scrap she could remember. It earned her no respite. Every scrap had been told so many times before she could identify them by taste. As Delana kindly pointed out, well, not so.